afternoon to our friends in the gallery, friends from the media and stakeholders, good afternoon and welcome. And to colleagues from the IEC, good afternoon. The program for today, honorable members, is to receive presentation from the IEC and then engage with that presentation as we've been doing up to now with everybody else, and hopefully after this afternoon's engagement we will be not totally equipped but better equipped than when we started for us to have our deliberations. Just to remind members, we agreed at the meeting in V454 that we will have a political discussion that will inform the paper. I don't know what to call it. Draft or anything that will inform the paper that we would ask the researchers to present and to be a starting point for us to work on whether we want a new bill or a new act, whether we retain the status quo or whether we amend the current act. So we will get that presentation today, we'll engage with it. They are coming in. We will ask the research team to prepare some sort of a skeleton that that they can present very briefly to us tomorrow, not as the paper, but to assist us when we give them some sort of instruction as to what it is that we want for next week, Tuesday. We meet Tuesday morning to start deliberations proper, and we'll take it from there. So I'm hoping the research team are on their way or are here already, or we will certainly give them that instruction so that by the end of the day, today, we have some idea of them having picked up what has emerged so far from our discussions. In consultation with our colleagues from the IEC, they suggesting, honorable members, and you can say yay or nay, that they do both presentations. You recall they were going to present the here and now, what is it that they are doing, and then they were going to present on the basis of their research what it should look like going forward. And in consultation with them, they agreed that it is probably going to be more fruitful if they do both presentations and then for us to engage with them. So they'll tell us what is it that they're doing currently, shortfalls, gaps. Then they will give us how they see the process going forward and we will engage with them. We had originally given them about 30 minutes for each presentation. We've agreed that we will give you 45 minutes for both presentations. And then after both presentations, we will engage with you on those presentations, if that's okay with you, sir. I'm looking to members if that's okay with them, or do you want to split it into what is it that they're currently doing or what is it that they're doing forward? I'm in your hands as to how we proceed. Combine? Mr. Lees gives me the authority to say let's combine. Fine. So, if at the absolute latest, sir, you could be done with your presentation by no later than 3 o'clock, it'll give us about half an hour to an hour for our discussions with you and take it from there. So we want to be out of here by 4 at the absolute latest. but if you can do it in shorter time, all the better. As is customary, are there any apologies for today? Besides Ms. Mafu, who has got a standing apology for this week, any other apologies? No? No? No apologies, fine. Those that aren't here will join us later. And I'm informed that there was a presentation distributed yesterday on the IEC. Members have that presentation. I'm not sure if you're going to do a overhead, but there is a presentation that we could use as reference as we go forward. We'll allow you, sir, to introduce yourself and your team, and from there you can get straight into the presentation. Over to you, and we will start looking at you around about 5 to 4 as an indication that your time is about to expire. I beg your pardon? 5 to 3, I beg your pardon. 5 to 3 years. Thanks, Mr. Sal. Over to you. Hello. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I know how strict Parliament can be with time. I've watched you on TV. I will try to make sure that I don't embarrass myself by going over the time that you have allocated to us. My name is Terry Zelani. I'm the Vice Chairperson of the Commission. And perhaps from the outset, I've got to apologize for other commissioners. As you know, that we're a commission of five people. Judge Makanya, unfortunately, is not able to join us. He is in court. And Commissioner Finger is in Angola for the elections in Angola. And both the chairperson as well as Commissioner Lau are currently in consultation over other critical matters with the president, and therefore they were not able to join us. But they would have loved to be part of this discussion. And the team that I have here next to me is Mulungisi Gelembe, is a manager in the Commission Services. And next to him is Esther De Wet. Esther De Wet is our acting Chief Financial Officer. And next to her is Boitumelo Ranyani, and then behind them is Marco Granelli, who is the communication manager, and then next to him is the manager in the electoral operation, Stuart Murphy. As indicated, in terms of the structure that we're going to follow, we will deal with the RPPF. RPPF is what we are currently managing. We will indicate some of the challenges as well as possible solutions. And then immediately after that, we will then deal with what we see as the way forward. And then we'll focus on critical elements. I must indicate that as an organization, we went through this together. We did not want to make, in certain areas, firm proposals, but instead we look at policy options. And then you will be able to see when I come to those elements of the policy options that we are looking into. We're moving from an understanding and a premise that political parties do require funds for all their activities, including campaigning, canvassing, governance and administration, even contesting elections via the deposits. And the South African Constitution specifically provides for party funding. Section 236 relates to enhancing the multi-party democracy. National legislation must provide for funding of political parties participating in national and provincial legislature in an equitable and proportional basis. The the Public Funding of Represented Political Parties Act, promulgated on the 1st of 1998, and it is the one that we are currently administering as the Electoral Commission. In terms of Section 4.1 of the Act, the Chief Electoral Officer of the Electoral Commission is responsible for the management and administration of the fund, and also is the accounting officer there. The fund is not only administered by the Electoral Commission, but political parties themselves are also required to manage the allocation that they're given. What do we see as a problem statement? Despite the provision in Section 4.1 regarding the management and administration of the fund, the Act does not provide for the funding of the resources required to manage and administer the fund. Administratively, I agree that the Electoral Commission will be refunded for administering overheads amounting to about 0.3% of the parliamentary allocation. An administrative fee mainly covers the cost of printing the annual report of the fund, the AG, for auditing the books, and a portion of salaries of people who are currently managing the fund. Section 4.2 requires that the records must be kept of the fund in accordance with generally accepted accounting practice for all the monies received by the fund and payments made thereof. The difficulty and the challenge with that is that the Act requires financial statements to be prepared in accordance with GAAP accounting principles that are no longer used in South Africa. This is a matter that we've been thinking of submitting to Parliament for a review. Of course, this creates confusion and complicates audits, not only for the administration of the fund, but also for political parties, because we are using a system that basically is no longer applicable. Possible solution: provision should be made that the accounting principles and practice should state in the Act, stated in the Act, should withstand the test of time. Whatever arrangements, whatever changes that are made, the system must be able to be functional. In this regard, note should be taken of the fact that smaller political parties in some instances lack internal capacity and cannot afford to even contract external capacity in order to do their books. Smaller parties find it difficult to pay external independent auditors to audit their books, and from time to time we've got difficulties in having, and we've got to assist those political parties in order for them to be able to comply. Current status: a source of income permissible under the fund in terms of Section 2 of the Act are as follows: parliamentary appropriations, donations nationally and internationally, interest receivable, as well as monies accrued from other sources. The Act does provide for the receipt of private and foreign donations directly into the fund. However, in practice, the only income of the fund relates to parliamentary appropriations. Again, the challenge and the difficulty is that the Electoral Commission does not have the staff and the resources to deal with the administration of any form of private funding. International experience has shown that the implementation of a regulatory framework of private funding is very costly. We will refer a little bit in detail on this aspect when we're dealing with the way forward with the second presentation. Capacity challenges might compromise also the Electoral Commission in the execution of its mandate, should it be required to also administer funding received from donors. Again, another challenge is that as the Act currently directs, any donations that may in future be received in a fund would be distributed to political parties as per the current formula of 90% proportional and 10% equitable. This will not assist with leveling of the political playing field, as the bigger parties will receive the biggest share.
despite the provision in the Act, the administration of the fund was never officially been approached by prospective donors in relation to private and foreign donations to the fund. In other words, even though there is a provision within the Act that the fund can receive money from other sources other than appropriation from Parliament, we have not received nor embarked on any program to try to get funding from other sources. A possible solution: should private funding be regulated and Section 2.2 of the Act actively promoted, it may be necessary to change the formula used for the distribution of funds as stated in the regulations to benefit smaller represented parties to a greater extent. Alternatively, it might be necessary to establish separate regulations for the distribution of private funding by the fund to political parties. Careful consideration should be given to continued administration of the Electoral Commission of the fund versus a separate regulatory body with a mandate to monitor and enforce the funding of political parties. We make a case when it comes to the second presentation on this particular aspect. We are saying, in terms of the institutional framework, there are two possibilities. One is, of course, that the fund could actually be located within the Commission, but we indicate the kind of the disadvantage and the difficulties associated with that. And then there is also a possibility of creating a separate entity that would actually be able to deal with this. And we'll indicate why we believe that is a better option. Again, in terms of current status, in terms of Section 5.1.B of the Public Funding of Represented Political Parties Act, allocation to political parties may be used for any purpose compatible with a party's functioning as a political party in a modern democracy. These responsibilities include the development of political will of people, i.e. allowing people to choose, bringing the party's influence to bear on the shaping of public opinion, inspiring and furthering political education by the political parties. And I think within this context, the fund does also allow the political parties to create whatever institute that they can actually be able to create in order to be able to refine their policy positions. Again, promoting active participation by individual citizens in the political life, exercising an influence on political trends, and ensuring continuous vital links between the people and the organs of state. A party must account for the money allocated to it under this classification, personal expenditure, accommodation, etc., etc. Again, we state this as another challenge, that the current arrangement benefits larger political parties that are represented in Parliament as well as provincial legislatures. Smaller and especially unrepresented political parties and independent candidates appear not to have sustainable access to funding. It is therefore safe to say that between 85% and 90% of funds allocated to represented political parties from the fund are mainly used to maintain a co-administrative structure, paying for the administrative overheads as indicated. Only a small portion of the fund allocated is actually used for election-specific activities. Political parties, big and small, represented and non-represented, are thus largely dependent on other sources of income to support the election-related activities and campaign. We are quite conscious of the fact that from the fiscus, it may be not possible to get as much as all the political parties would want to have in order for them to be able to run their parties. And therefore, the issue of private funding will always be an option that should actually be explored. Possible solution: this reality strengthens the argument for the provision of specific election campaigning funding to parties during heightened election campaigning period. Regulated donor funding may play a vital role in this regard. We move from an understanding that the issue of private funding will always be there and it must happen, but we try to suggest to honourable members that it will be necessary for such a fund to be regulated. Non-allowable uses of the funds allocated, it is in relation to those issues, and I don't want to go to each one of them because I think honourable members do have the presentation before them. The challenge again in relation to non-allowable uses of funds, although monies allocated to political parties may not be used to invest in any business, Section 3.2 of the Act does provide that monies of the fund that are not required immediately for making allocation to political parties may be invested with public investment commissioners contemplated or now what is referred to commonly as PIC. Due to the ongoing cash flow difficulties that the political parties have, the Electoral Commission has never implemented the provision of that section. You know, it has never been possible for the Electoral Commission to invest the money allocated to the political parties with the PIC. Possible solutions: should private funding be regulated, it might be worthwhile to further explore the provision of Section 3.2. This provision might be useful mechanism which might allow political parties to passively benefit from investment activities embarked on by the fund without any conflict of interest. Parliamentary appropriations, and this is the basis for allocations. Parliamentary appropriations are made to the fund. The Act prescribes that only political parties represented in government at national and provincial level are entitled to funding. The amount available for distribution must be gazetted by the IEC, and this amount is distributed to political parties for any financial year that is represented in the National Assembly or any provincial legislature, or both in the National Assembly and any provincial legislature. The system that is being used is 90-10, 90% being proportionality and 10% being equitable. Proportional allocations are based on the number of seats awarded to a party in the National Assembly and the provincial legislature jointly. So currently we're working on the basis of about 830 seats. Equitable allocations are made to respective provinces in proportion to the number of members of the respective provincial legislatures. The allocation to particular provinces is divided equally among the participating parties in the legislature of that province. The funds are paid to political parties in four equal payments, the first being made within the first 4 weeks of the new financial year beginning on the 1st of April of each year. 50% of total amount received during a financial year may be carried over to the next financial year. The challenge with this is that regulated public funding to represent political parties is an important source of campaign funding. However, the formula 90% and 10% equitably favors the bigger parties at the expense of smaller parties. I've already made reference to this point earlier. The parties not represented in Parliament are therefore not entitled to any allocation from the fund. I indicated earlier on in terms of leveling the playing field, and I think this issue was raised very strongly with the Commission towards 2014 national and provincial elections by those political parties that were not represented in either National Assembly or provincial legislatures. It is often argued that the Act fails smaller and non-represented political parties. It is fair argued that due to this lack of funding to smaller and non-represented political parties, the Act fails to promote the multi-party democracy envisaged in Section 1D of the Constitution. Possible solution: a review of the existing public funding allocation formula to provide for an increase in equitable proportion allocated to represented political parties is proposed. This funding should continue to be allocated on a quarterly basis to continue to maintain the core administration of parties as outlined in paragraph 4.1. We further recommend that, in addition, consideration should be given to additionally provide funding for election campaigning as outlined in paragraph 4.2. As I indicated earlier on, the current allocation appears not really to cover the election campaigning by political parties. It is not advisable that funding be made available on a continuous basis to non-represented parties due to lesson learned during the floor crossing period, where it was almost impossible to hold small new parties accountable to the funds allocated to them. In other words, if you allocate money in that fashion and a particular political party does not actually manage to get representation and either it deregisters or the people who are supposed to be representing those particular parties disappear, it becomes very difficult to manage such a fund. Now, that next slide basically indicates allocation from 2014-2015 until 2017-2018. The amount there indicates the political parties that are benefiting from the current allocation and how much has actually been allocated for each political party for a particular period. And the second one also indicates the total amount that has actually been allocated to political parties since 1998, when the fund started, until 2019-2020 financial period. The responsibilities of each political party receiving an allocation from the fund include the following: keeping a separate account with a bank in the Republic into which money allocated from the fund must be deposited. Appointing an official within the party as an accounting officer to take responsibility for the money received in this bank account and ensure that the party complies with the requirements of the Act. The accounting officer must keep separate books and the records for this money in a manner that is prescribed. The auditor is to express an opinion as to whether or not the allocation has been spent in accordance with the Act. The accounting officer must submit the financial statement and the auditor's report to the Commission annually. A consolidated set of financial statements is then audited by the Auditor General. The challenge, again, with this fund, due to lack of funding, new and smaller political parties are often not in a position to appoint financially qualified accountants to do the books for them, which puts much more burden to the Commission. Parties often have to rely on the goodwill of party members to perform this function. This leads to the missing of deadlines as prescribed by the Act and resultant adverse audit findings by the Auditor General when the fund is audited. Some parties rely on external auditors on a pro bono basis for the audit of their books. Again, at the beginning of each five-year electoral cycle, when new political parties qualify for funding from the fund, the Electoral Commission has to embark on an extensive training program in order to make sure that the new entrants understand how the fund operates and what are the kind of the things that needs to happen in order for them to comply. In view of the above, some parties may not be able to afford the costs attached transparent, regular, and proactive disclosure that may be required should private funding be regulated. In the interest, as a solution, in the interest of promoting accountability, consideration could be given to make annual allocation to represented parties for the sole purpose of facilitating the audit of their financial statement in terms of the Act. There will be an extended need for parties to be continuously trained on financial management, as indicated earlier. This requirement will have a huge impact on the human resource and skills required to manage such a fund. In terms of Section 7 of the Act, the Electoral Commission may, if it has reasonable ground to believe that the party has failed to comply with the provisions of the Act, suspend payment to such a political party. But I must indicate that from time to time, even though it may not be possible for some of the political parties to meet the deadlines, we have been getting cooperation from the political parties in relation to accounting for this fund. Where funds have been expended in violation of the terms of the Act, the accounting office of such a party is required to repay the amounts concerned to the fund, and a civil claim may be instituted by the Electoral Commission. As I indicated just now, that unfortunately we have never had to invoke that particular section. The onus rests solely with the Electoral Commission to establish whether or not a political party complies with Section 5 of the Act before it makes an allocation to a party from the fund. Today, the Electoral Commission has not instituted any civil claim against a political party for funds irregularly spent. Funds irregularly spent by political parties are recovered from future payments to defaulting parties unless a defaulting party ceases to exist. The challenge with that, experience has shown that except for the instances which occurred during the floor closing period, instances of funds being irregularly spent by parties are minimal. Those instances that do occur are mainly as a result of ignorance of the requirement of the Act, and hence the kind of training that we normally go through with the political parties. There is a very fine line between the independence of the Electoral Commission and its duties to discipline defaulting parties in terms of the Act. Careful consideration should therefore be given to the continued role of the Electoral Commission in the management and administration of the fund, should the fund be expanded to include private funding. In a bid to protect the independence of the Electoral Commission, careful consideration should be given to the continued administration of the Electoral Commission of the fund versus a separate regulatory body with a mandate to monitor and enforce the private and public funding of political parties. Advantage of RPPF system is to administer and understand, transparent, and accommodate equitable and proportional elements. Disadvantages of RPPF impact on the fiscus, reinforces the status quo by favoring incumbent and larger parties, does not assist new contestants to compete based on past performance, no allocation to parties at municipal level. Now, honorable members, having said, we come into the second part of our presentation, and in the second part of presentation, we'll include certain elements as part of the things that we have learned from our administration of the fund, but at the same time, we are also going to be taking consideration what is actually happening out there in order to guide this.
Sorry. Have members got the second presentation that they're going to talk to? I haven't. We haven't received it. What is the suggestion? We listen and take notes? I beg your pardon? I'm saying we can continue as it is now and make sure we get copies later. Is that okay? Will you make that available for us? If it is at all possible, the boss is saying if you could email it to us now, they can make copies, and as we go through it, or by the time we get to questioning, we can, if it's possible, to email it to us now. If not, is it possible? Yeah. Somebody will give you an email address. If you email it to them, they'll try and make copies as you speak. You can continue, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much. There are a few points that I want to raise before I get into the presentation. The main focus of the program Secondly, to strengthen the integrity of the South African democracy. Thirdly, to deal with the issues of ratings. We are bringing in the element of gender on this particular presentation. And this is informed by various studies that we have done, and you'll be able to see when we go through the presentation on the basis upon which we are making certain recommendations. And then we are also recommending a very comprehensive framework. This comprehensive framework, in our opinion, must not only deal with the national and provincial elements, but it must be able to cover the national, provincial, municipal, as well as candidates, whether they are independent candidates or they are candidates coming from the political parties. We believe that a comprehensive system is the only one that can actually be able to avoid the situation where candidates are used as a proxy by political parties to fundraise with the understanding that they are not going to be captured or they are not going to be required to account for the funds that they will actually be fundraising. We start by through that quote that politics has become so expensive that it takes a lot of money even to be defeated. It is globally acknowledged that democracy is expensive. A key element of free and fair elections is for the electorate to make informed decisions. This means voters need knowledge and information about the various political parties and candidates. Increasingly, parties and candidates must not just compete with one another for the attention of voters, but also compete for airtime, airspace, in an increasingly cluttered advertising environment. We look at the South African historical context, accepting that political parties require funds for all their activities, including campaigning, canvassing, governance and administration, and even contesting elections via deposits. The South African Constitution specifically provides for party funding. Section 236 refers to enhancing multi-party democracy. National legislation must provide for the funding of political parties participating in national and provincial legislature in an equitable and proportional basis. And this is catered for through the RPPF that we were talking about earlier on. And again, we raising the same issues in terms of how this fund operates, that 10% is equitable and 90% proportional. And then total allocations in 2015-2016 financial year, it's about 127. And in the National Assembly, we've got 15 parties that received a total of 114 million, and 12 parties at the provincial level received a total of 12 million. Benefits. I have already indicated what the benefits of the system is. We look at the additional forms of public funding. Constituency allowances, adopted in 1995 and passed as part of the National Assembly's rules and order. The constituency allowance is meant to give support to parliamentarians that would enable them to integrate their work inside Parliament with the work outside. Even though South Africa has a proportional system, this provision makes for allowance for parliamentarians to maintain constituency offices through this allocation. Now, there is an element that is also very important, that when we're looking at the party fund, you've got to take into consideration that once at a national level, the IEC is managing the RPPF. Various provinces have also established enabling legislation in terms of which they are still getting money from the fiscus that they are using for party funding. The slide that we have there indicates the provinces and the formula that is being used by different provinces, as well as the amount that have actually been allocated for party funding. We are raising this particular issue so that when you're looking at party funding, you develop a system that is comprehensive, that is integrated throughout the country, so that you do not actually have all this fragmentation happening at a different level. I was looking at the allocation of Gauteng since the inception of the fund, and thus far they have actually allocated about $500 million to political parties. So it becomes important, therefore, when you are looking at the comprehensive picture, that you take into consideration the allocation that is already taking place in different provinces and begin to create a regulatory framework that will be able to take into consideration all the expenditure, because the expenditure that we are talking about is, in any case, coming from the fiscus. Other forms of public support, public broadcast, ICASA is empowered through the Electronic Act to ensure equitable treatment of political parties by the public. It means if a province is not here, they have not established a mechanism for public funding in that province. Is that the case? No.
Honourable members, let's allow the presentation to continue. Make note that we can challenge it as we.
Okay. Yeah. We'll come to that, and the team will address you on that particular
okay. Continue, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're looking at other forms of public support, which requires resources, and we're saying that the public broadcast is managed through ICASA, and ICASA is empowered through the Electronic Act to ensure equitable treatment of political parties by the public broadcasting service during the election period by means of public election broadcasts. This is conducted according to a formula based on represented political parties, as indicated. Public election broadcasts not used by a political party during the election period are then forfeited. In relation to private funding, currently, private funding is unregulated in South Africa. There is no legislation that compels political parties to disclose the names of persons or organizations that provide donations. No limits with respect to the amount a donor can contribute to a political party over time, election or non-election periods. Political parties are allowed to own their own private companies, which they use as investment vehicles for there are different parties. Consequently, the public is not informed about where political parties get a large share of their money from and how they spend it. This clearly goes against international practices, which commonly regulates private income through incentives and disincentives or bans and limitations. There is global acknowledgement that unfettered and unregulated private funding of political parties has inherent risks. South Africa is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, which, amongst others, promotes enhanced transparency in the financing of election campaigns and political parties. South Africa is also a signatory member of the African Union and is in accordance with Article 10 of the AU, a convention on preventing and combating corruption, is obliged to adopt legislative measures to incorporate the principle of transparency into funding of political parties. Two-thirds of the world's countries ban foreign political donations to political parties. Annual contribution limits or limits in relation to the election for parties and candidates exist in more than half of the world's countries. 64% of the world's countries either ban anonymous donations or set a threshold above which the donor's identity has to be disclosed. Two-thirds of the world's countries also require political parties and or candidates to make their reports publicly available, and commonly both private and public money is included in these reports. The slide that you see there indicates the regulated and unregulated private funding, starting with South Africa as highly regulated, to US and Mexico, which is highly regulated. I need to indicate that the Electoral Commission, the Federal Electoral Commission of the USA, does not manage the elections. All they do, they just manage party funding and enforcement and ensuring compliance. South Africa is currently an outlier, as indicated in the slides. Models for party funding. There are three primary models international of funding of political parties. The first one refers to public funding. This model relies on almost exclusively public funding of political parties and bans private or foreign donations and sponsorships. Due to fiscal constraint, this is very rare. Private funding, this is more common. 32% of the countries that we looked at do not provide direct public funding to political parties and therefore uses this model. But we've got also a hybrid system where there's a combination of public and private funding. This is the most common system in use. Many international electoral networks, AWEB, Association of World Election Management Bodies, Commonwealth Electoral Network, and other governance, democracy NGOs have developed guidelines for good practice in regulating funding. International IDEA has the following guidelines for regulating private funding of political parties. I need to indicate that because South Africa is a member of International IDEA, in our preparation for this, we interacted with them, and they have also given us some ideas in terms of how they believe this particular area is being dealt with by different areas, by different jurisdictions. Regulations should be introduced, therefore, that limit campaign donations and spending and encourage smaller donations. Provide public funding to political parties, including non-monetary support, e.g. media access, tax incentives, etc., etc. The third principle is a balance of public and private sources of income for parties and candidates. The fourth being the increase of transparency. Systematic documentation of party income and expenditure is critical to increase transparency and build public trust in parties and democracy. The fifth one, to provide for compliance and enforcement, which talk to the importance of strong and capacitated regulatory authority, which is independent from government and political parties. It is important to include civil society organizations and political parties when drafting the legal regulatory framework governing funding of political parties. This enhances trust in the process and stands a better chance of developing a more credible outcome. Among the current common practice for imposing limits on private funding, increase in equity portion of public funding to assist smaller parties. Mexico uses 70-30, Ghana 63-35, with 5% to EMB to cover admin. Bans on foreign donations, and the countries that ban foreign donations are indicated there as the US and UK. Ban on government funding of parties, candidates excluding public funding. Globally, the most common ban on political donations relates to government resources, excluding the provision of regulated public funding. A total of 85% of countries in the IDEA study ban government donations in order to prevent the abuse of state resources. Set election campaign maximum spend limits for parties and or candidates. Set annual caps, ceiling for party donations overall, and for each donor organization or person. In Mexico, political parties may not receive from private funders an amount that is more than 10% of total public funding received by the party. A requirement for full transparency and disclosure from recipients and donors. Regulation also should cover additional non-monetary support for political parties, e.g., provision of infrastructure, access to media, etc., etc. Regulations specifically controlling limiting privileged access to state resources by the incumbents for electoral benefits. I must indicate that this also, in any case, it is covered in the Electoral Act currently under undue influence on the Code of Conduct. Linking of funds to other goals. Many countries link public funding to achievement of other democracy goals, e.g. gender representativity, financial disclosure and compliance. And then the table that you see there indicates the countries that are using gender-based conditions for funding. And then we are in a way also beginning to suggest that this may be a way of looking at it from our side, that even though you're looking at currently 90 to 10, honorable members might want to include maybe 20% on gender representativity and then also being applied equitably to the political parties. Again, the study indicates more countries that are using that element of gender. Regulation options for South Africa. The Electoral Commission supports a hybrid system of party funding which combines public and private funding. We support the drafting of a comprehensive political finance act that covers all aspects of party and candidate finance, including public and private funding, whether during an election year or in between, at all levels of government. I've indicated the challenges and the difficulties of not including the local sphere as part of the regulation of this region. Support all party funding managed by a single entity. Regulations should apply not only to political parties, but to candidates, largely to avoid a situation where candidates become proxy for political parties in terms of fundraising. Possible considerations. Consider expanding public funding to cover all levels of government, national, provincial, as well as municipal. We are also noting that this may require an amendment to Section 236 of the Constitution, but there is a debate amongst us on that particular aspect, because that element, that section does not refer to the municipal sphere, and we are not sure, some of us, whether in a situation where a section of the Constitution is silent on a particular provision, whether silence means exclusion. But I'm sure it's a matter that honorable members can explore further through their legal capacity to see as to whether it would indeed require Section 236 to be amended in order to be able to cover the municipal area. But we essentially say that it is not possible to look at the party funding only focusing on national and provincial level. It is important that you cover all spheres of government. Consider a review of the current allocation formula to enhance support for smaller and emerging parties. Consider a portion of funding for meeting gender representativity goals. Consider additional allocations in election years to specifically support campaigning. Consider allocating a portion of the allocations for the sole purpose of facilitating the audit of their financial statement in terms of the Act to enhance transparency and compliance. Consider banning or setting strict limits on foreign funding. Compulsory disclosure of political parties of sources of funding above a certain threshold. Consider tax incentives to encourage corporate and individual donors based on public disclosure. Consider donations limits for corporate and individual donors. There's got to be a requirement of annual reporting and disclosure of party and candidate finances with a searchable public database of political finance data. We now coming back to that element that I referred to earlier on. international practice on which institutions are responsible for monitoring and enforcement of compliance ranges between relying on election management body or a standalone separate agency or entity to regulate. I've already indicated that the Federal Election Commission of USA and Tanzania have established separate regulatory institutions that are responsible for monitoring campaign and related expenditure by political parties. Mexico's Electoral Institute contains a specialist administrative arm called the Commission for Monitoring of Resources of Political Parties and Groups. India requires parties to provide a detailed election campaign account to the Electoral Commission. Advantages of having this within the EMB: all election and political parties matters under one roof, independent and credible oversight, systems already in place for liaison engagement with political parties. Electoral Commission already manages RPPM. Party funding is an important aspect of ensuring free and fair elections. The disadvantage: management of such a fund entails a complex and detailed process that may divert the attention from the core electoral management, requiring EMB to police parties, which may mean conflict with other members. Compliance with private and public funding regulations will have significant financial and resource implications for the institution tasked with the implementation of that mechanism. Meeting the requirements of transparency will also have financial implications for parties and candidates. Sanctions. Regulations will need to include a broad range of sanctions with varying degrees of severity. These sanctions may include reduction or loss of public funds, fines, deregistration of party, or loss of nomination of candidates, and imprisonment. Some of this, as you will notice, they are actually mirror image of penalties that are already there within the electoral law. So we are suggesting that in considering this particular aspect, you might want to use, again, the mechanisms that are already applicable in the legislation in order to deal with this particular aspect. Now, perhaps in conclusion, honourable members, I could just indicate that because we are talking about a comprehensive cover here, a framework that will be able to deal with various elements. We've talked about parties that are represented in Parliament, which are currently benefiting from the system of the current RPPF, and then parties that are not represented. I need to indicate that in the 2014 national and provincial elections, we had about 200 parties registered and 45 contested the elections. In 2016 local government elections, we had 345 political parties registered and 205 of them participated in the elections. Members, honorable members, are aware that sometimes the political parties that register don't actually contest the elections at national and provincial level, but only contest the election at a local level. So when you're developing a regime that will look into party funding, it is important also to take into consideration the number of political parties that are already registered and then how many political parties are also participating in the electoral process, because that will then be able to give you an idea as to whether from the fiscals, whether the fiscals would actually be able to manage the kind of the resources that would have to go to particularly political parties that are not represented in the national and provincial legislatures. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Any further contributions? No? Thank you very much. Sir, it is 3 o'clock, honourable members. Let's take questions of clarity, because the real debate starts next week. These are really questions of clarity to inform our debate next week. Can we have
Honorable Matthijs, Honorable Lees, Honorable Self, Honorable Kulisa, Honorable Bongo, Bodhi, Singh, Lamini, and Maseko.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, IEC, for your presentation. On the gap, the accounting principles, I agree that there needs to be some changes, and that will be our input on that. The act you say allows for the IEC to actually receive funding privately outside the public funding that you receive. Are you saying that this has never ever been utilized at all? So we've never encouraged private citizens, corporations, etc., to do so. We've had submissions here from some political parties and also from other individuals requesting that we set up a democratic, what is it called, a multi-party central fund. So what would be your take on that, and why wouldn't we just utilize the IEC to be able to manage, since the Act already allows for that, and what would the IEC need to be able to be capacitated to form those duties instead of us reinventing the wheel? I wanted to ask about, okay, I think that's an issue we'll need to deal with SARS, which is the VAT issue. I wanted clarity on the proportional allocations, right? Is the Act clear on what it should be? Does the Act actually say that it should be 90% proportional and 10% equitable, right? And the reason I'm asking this is that you just put up a slide showing that the provinces, and there's also been submissions here that legislatures, it might actually be unconstitutional that legislatures are actually administering public funding to political parties. So the legislatures obviously have their own policies, and their policies ultimately should be based on an act, right? Because you can't go and develop policies outside an act that has been adopted by Parliament. So if the legislatures have created policies where they say 100% is proportional, or it's 80-20%, and the act is saying that it should be 90-10%, then that means even the legislatures are even acting unconstitutional as well. So I'd like you to speak to that. You didn't touch on electoral fees. And there was, I think it was Zapo that submitted or made a submission yesterday. And they were saying that all parties are charged the same amount of money, right, to participate in elections. And I get their point. And then we get proportional allocations after that. So I'd like you to speak to that. I mean, we get the point that we can't have every single everybody just wanting to contest elections, and we'll end up with this huge voting sheets. But there has to be some way of us being able to reduce that and leveling out the playing field, so more parties, or there can be more multi-party democracy, or strengthening multi-party democracy rather. Thank you.
You've got all those. You'll make notes and respond once everybody's done. Okay, so if you need clarity, you better just do it, but I think it was very clear in terms of the questions. Honorable Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the question of local government funding for parties at local government level, is the proposal, I mean, it seems to be coming through very strongly that the IEC thinks that should happen. So would that be additional funding or simply a reallocation of the existing funding? That's the one question. Then there was a comment that I really battled, and maybe I just wasn't listening properly. What was the issue about candidate fundraising? And I just need some clarity on what exactly we're talking about here, and what the mischief is there. And then, Mr. Chairman, what we're getting here is rather a nice picture of funding to political parties throughout the country. Are you able to give us a complete picture for all funds, statutory funds or from legislatures, which are are paid out currently to political parties. So put the private funding aside, but just the public funding. I think there's an error with the one schedule. KZN was, I think, the third province, and we opposed it in KZN, was the funding of political parties, other than the constituency allowances. So I think there might be something there. But that would be something very useful for us to get this big picture of how much we're paying out and where we're paying it out. Yes, Chairman, then I just a comment. You know, Mexico is the best regulated, but I'm not sure that when we keep referring to corruption levels, and the USA as well for that matter, that it has achieved too much in terms of reducing corruption levels. So I'm not sure that this link that keeps getting made between corruption and transparency of party political funding is a real link. I think it's a perceived link and not real.
Honourable Sal?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I want to start with my favourite topic, which is the abuse of state resources, because you said correctly that it's already laid down as an offence in terms of the code of conduct. But I can't tell you how many times I've complained to the Commission about abuse of state resources. In the last election, we had to go to court because the Commission said they were unable to do anything about it. Now, this has got to be a package deal. If you want to have regulation of private resources, then you need to have regulation of state resources as well. And those need to be, the Commission or somebody else needs to develop some backbone to deal with abuse of state resources where it happens. Secondly, I'd like to, you make a sweeping statement about either banning or placing strict limits on foreign funding. Now, there are different forms of foreign funding, you will appreciate. I mean, there's government funding. I think most of us believe that governments ought not to fund, or foreign governments ought not to fund, political parties. But it's also the case that we have a diaspora of South Africans living abroad, all of whom, if they're registered, are entitled to vote. Ought they not to be entitled to make contributions to the political parties of their choice, bearing in mind that you are at least floating the idea of a total ban on foreign funding? Or is that not foreign funding? In other words, what is meant by foreign funding? There's also a number of political, what might be called fraternal arrangements between South African political parties and political parties abroad. Many of them, through their foundations, make contributions or assist in the development of democracy. Is that, in your view, to be banned as well? Then I'd like to latch on to what the Honourable Maté said about new and emerging entrant parties, because their party was a new entrant, and they did rather well in the election. It seems to me that one needs to strike a balance between parties that are serious, that ought to be assisted to get registered and get on with the business, and fly-by-night operators. And I recollect that before the 1994 election, political parties were required to get a reputable survey that showed that they were a serious political party to qualify for funding from the IEC at that stage. And your views on that. Now, at the moment, if the IEC suspects that there might be a abuse of the code of conduct, the typical instrument that is used to deal with that is the electoral court. And I wondered whether you had given idea that if there was to be this regime, that in the case of abuses, it would be the electoral court that would deal with these. these matters rather than the IEC itself, because I do accept the point that there may be a confusion of mandates between being the referee in a particular election and being the enforcer, if I can use a Mexican term. Finally, your presentation makes some assumptions with the greatest respect, and so do a lot of the other presentations that we've received here. One of the assumptions is that it's critical to build public trust in parties and democracies, and the unregulated private funding undermines that. I want to know whether there's any empirical evidence that you have in the IEC to support that contention. Because at the moment, I'm sure everybody's read the George Orwell book called Animal Farm. There's a pig there called Snowflake. Snowflake goes around saying, four legs good, two legs bad. And I have a suspicion that the discourse around private funding has become rather similar. Thank you, Chair.
Prof. Kovic. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's welcome the presentation from the Deputy Chairperson of the Commission, Mabuselane. And two issues, Chairperson. One, in 4.2, the Deputy Chairperson makes, 4.2 of the presentation, makes reference to a fund called, it's a specific election campaigning fund, which could be of assistance to parties, especially at the height of the election, at the height of the campaign. So I want to find out from the Deputy Chairperson as to where such funding could come from. And I'm cognizant of the fact that just underneath that point you refer to donor funding, which you are not averse to, but that must be regulated. Now, which then leads us to the second question as to, don't you think that donor funding adds to matters of corruption, undue or bias influence, and also lack of transparency, etc. And how should it be regulated? And whether the IEC should be the regulator of the donor funding. And also, I'm mindful of the fact that you have heard from Honorable Matthias that in the previous presentations, there was mention of the democracy, multi-party democracy funds. So these are the issues I want to bring to the fore, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
I thank you very much, Prof. Honorable Bongo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Deputy Chairperson, for the presentation. I think it's a beautiful presentation. It's sharing a light on what has been transpiring all these years until to date. I think we're moving from a premise that we want to encourage transparency, accountability, and enhance democracy. Now, part of the presentation you have taken yesterday, the issues were raised very sharply, which I want you to comment on and assist the committee to take certain decisions. The issues around the registration. Would a party that has a million members registers with the same amount with a party that has about 20 members? What would be your view in terms of the flexibility, in terms of the proportionality, in terms of the parties, in terms of registration? Because it may be a bit unfair that a new entrant will have to register with the same amount as the party that has a million members, against the background of the proportionality that has been raised. And I also want your comment around the synergy that we need to create as the as parliament, the national, provincial, and local. Because more often than not at local sphere, you will find individual persons contesting the elections. How to align the party to the funding of individuals around the elections at the local sphere? What would be your view on contribution to the to parliament? And we have raised the matter of the capping in the presentation. I want you to progressively assist the committee. As we're speaking about capping, what will your insight and view? At what point do we say this amount is fair, this amount is not fair? Because other presentation you have taken was that if you we have another political party using R1 billion, the other one using a lesser amount, it may amount to vote buying and so on and so forth. So what is your progressive view in terms of giving the capping in terms of the funds that are given to political parties? But I also like your input in terms of the transgressions. I think that sheds a light to us as we will go to the deliberations around the transgressions. And lastly, your comment on the foreign government having to fund certain political parties. Because we have been informed that other parties are funded by foreign governments. So what would be your comment in terms of us having to assist Parliament and the people of this country in terms of not getting other foreign governments to have interest on what is happening in the country? Thank you.
Comrade Gordy.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. I also want to welcome the presentation by the IEC, which is premised on the dialectics of legislation and policy. It's not static, it moves. The need to review, enhance and amend in the light of experience and evolving conditions. I only have one issue to raise, which I think the spirit of your presentation, both the first and the second, seem to suggest quite strongly the need to look at how public funding can be utilized to broadly assist all political parties that are represented, either in provincial or the National Assembly. And in part, that would entail reviewing the current formula that is being used, the 90% and 10%. And that maybe if it is reviewed, it would assist parties that are a bit smaller. But when you look at the implementation of that formula, in seeking to give effect to Section 236, which requires national legislation to provide for the funding of political parties participating in national and provincial legislatures, and then it. When you look at the current practice, because if you change from 9-10 to 8-20 or 60-40, in the way it is being currently implemented, I suspect it might not entirely capture the spirit of what you seek to achieve. When you look at the proportional allocation, it applies to parties in the provincial legislatures and national. But when it comes to the equitable share, it excludes the National Assembly and only relates to prophecies. I'm not sure how we came to the interpretation that equitable means promise. And if so, why and how it is so. Because if that is not changed, it will mean that even if you can have 10 seats in the National Assembly, if you don't have a seat in the province, then you don't get a share in the in what is supposed to be the equitable share. I think, Comrade Chair, that will be the area I would be interested to get clarity on. Thank you.
Honorable Singh. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Just to follow on Honorable Godi, the figures that we have would suggest that there are parties who may have one seat in the province that get more than a party with two seats in the National Assembly in terms of the equitable allocation. And these are figures that we have. So, you know, there's some kind of anomaly there, and I'd like to know is, within the IEC, who are the administrators of the fund, and I understand that you have to work in terms of the regulation and the act, has there been any debate on these two words, equitable and proportional? And what meaning have you given to equitable and proportional as contained in the Constitution? That's my first question, Chair. Secondly, early on, I'm sorry, I just, you know, I interrupted when the presentation was on, when I looked at the list that you provided on additional public funding. But I saw that KZN was omitted. And I am aware that there is funding made available to parties in KwaZulu-Natal through some acts that they have passed themselves. So what I'd like to know is if at some stage we can have that table updated, not only with all the provinces that you are aware of, but also in terms of the allocation, because you've got a 2012-13 as the most recent available, and I think the amounts could have increased considerably since then. But coming back to the provincial, from your point of view, is the legislation that they have passed consistent with what is the spirit of the Constitution, 236, in terms of equitable and proportional? And are they, is that legislation within the framework of national norms and standards? Because you can have provinces that have a majority, 90% of one party, that could take any legislation to their legislature and have it passed in their own favor. So what checks and balances are there from a national point of view, with national norms and standards? Have you looked at that? And lastly, if we look at the public, the forms of public funding, the three types of funding which we all know, the RPP, the constituencies, and the ones appropriated by legislatures, would I be correct in saying almost 80% of it is allocated on a proportional basis? Because if you look at the list that you've provided us here, additional public funding in provinces, most of them are proportional except for one or two, it says 80-20. If you look at the constituency allowance, it's proportional, totally proportional. It is only the RPP which you administer that has equitable and proportional. And that's only about 10 or 12% of the total funding of 1.2 billion. Would I be correct in making that assumption or placing that before you? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tami.
Thanks, Chairperson, to the IEC. You know, in terms of Section 19.1 of the Constitution, it says each and every citizen is free to make political choices, which include the right to form a political party, to participate in the activities or recruit members of political parties, and to campaign for a political party or cause. Now, you mentioned that you've got over 200 registered parties, but you've got 45 parties that contest elections. I need to understand the criteria between the two, because as far as our understanding is that for you to register, you don't need that much money
You just need certain signatures. But then when you want to contest, because the intention of registering is to go to the second phase of contestation. But with the high fees that the IEC require for you to contest, it's a setup. You just waste your time and go and get registered, because you are registered. That means you've got every right to go and contest. But the barrier to enter now, it comes to the issue of fees. Don't you think in a country where everything is commercialized, at least, because that's what the basis of this democracy was about. It was one of the key issues of saying we want to be given a right to vote. We want to be given a right to assemble and to form our own political parties. Now that it becomes highly commercialized, because it is, for you to register for national elections, 600,000, that means parties that don't have that kind of money, whom you have said they qualified because we already registered them, they will never contest elections. Do you think that setup is correct? Because to us, it's not correct. That's why I'm saying everything in this country is commercialized. You talk education, you talk health, everything, including the right to vote or the right to form a political party. Then on the issues of proportion, on your page five, you are on your problem statement, you are saying the current setup of 90-10, it will not assist in terms of level in playing fields. One of the submissions that was made with other parties was that because that proportion, you only get it after you've been allocated a seat. So how does it help in terms of that, since we've identified it as a problem statement, how do we resolve that issue? Then if you go to page 10, in terms of your enforcement, the enforcement that you're talking about here is what the IEC looks at in terms of the compliance on how do you spend your money. But would know that each and every institution, and from individuals in this country, if you are not in compliance with the tax laws of this country, you can't trade. Either an individual, or a company, or an NGO, including political parties. What is the mechanism that the IEC, they currently have in place to make sure that the political parties are in compliance with the tax law? I know that the political parties are exempt from paying what you call income tax. But pay as you earn, because the political parties by nature, they become employers. Do we have tax clearance certificate of all the political parties? Because these are public funds. So that means those tax clearance certificates, they should be there and they should be public, because this is public money. Because we know for a fact that there are parties, including the ruling party, that are not compliant when it comes to the pay as you earn. But they are busy conducting elections, and they are busy getting the funding from the IEC. What do you have in place? Do you have tax clearance certificate? If we ask you now that, can you provide the tax clearance certificate of all the parties that are in Parliament that contest elections to make sure that all those parties, they are tax compliant? Because the tax is the first issue. You break the tax laws, you can't participate in anything in this country. And then the last issue is the ruling party is coming here to say let's take money from the public first and give it to the politicians. And their argument is saying no, the members or the voters are the owners of political parties, which is not true. The members are the owners of political parties, because for the fact that you become a member, that means you are eligible to be elected to a political office. But ordinary citizens, they are not owners of political parties, they're just voters. So they say we must take the public money and give it to politicians, and we don't agree to that. We want to hear your thinking as the IEC. Do you agree on increasing political funding? If yes, why do you agree to that? On a country where we've got an economy that is not growing, where we've got all these challenges, do you agree? And some of the issues you mentioned here, that yourself as the IEC, you don't have the capacity, internal capacity to deal with private funding and other issues. Do you agree that you must give more money to the politicians? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Damini. Honourable Masek.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the IEC for the presentation, well researched.
very good presentation. I need to, I think parties need to speak for themselves and stop talking about other parties and misquoting and misstating issues that they do not know that they assume or they're thinking. On the Mr. Tlane, on the 90-10 proportionality of allocation, what has been your experience? Do you think that it is a fair equitable proportional base, or do you want to propose, not saying that impose, but propose another formula other than the 90-10? I think on funding of parties that are not represented, but they do emerge every time there's election. You know, we've got Kiss Party, we've got Soccer Party. They've always been there from time immemorial, and in every election they emerge, and they've never gotten a seat. So I think your argument was based on such, because if you have to look at the number, you said it's over 200 for national and provincial, and it's what, 45? You said 45? That contest. And I think Honorable Dlamini was saying that that every party, even at local government, the 235 and 205 that contest must be funded, and even if they don't get a seat. But I think also his argument was on that citizens do not have the right. But I think on that the 235 parties that was raising that are disadvantaged. But I believe that the purpose of registering a party is voluntary. And as to you decide later to contest is something else, but you are a party, you are registered as a party. So I think that one I was just stating on the you will come again and raise whatever you want to raise. Chair, and I was quiet when he was talking, Chair. I think for me, the IEC, on the amount, the funding that is given to political parties also have to use that amount for public education, including voter education. I know IEC comes in, but at a very limited aspect. And there's always a problem that when government goes and doing public voter education, it's like campaigning. So is it because of the resources of the IEC that they're not adequate for you to do that, so that then parties do not deplete what is allocated to them to do the general voter education? I think I like the effect of funding with conditions of gender representation. I think it will force every party to be gender represented, and I think the proportionality must also go with the number of gender parity that you have as a party. I believe that it is good for South Africa to also be part of the international standards and conventions and also practices of party funding. But I also wanted to raise the issue of the IEC itself. Several presenters have raised the issue that the IEC does not have enough capacity. If we have to raise the funding, they do not have that capacity to monitor and implement. So I just need your view on that. And lastly, on the allocation that we're presenting, I was just looking and thinking that provinces like Gauteng, because since 2004, the allocation of their seat is not proportional to their population. It is based on the 1999 electoral law, which I think was badly crafted, which did not allow, said the party's allocation will be at the 31st of March 1999. So it didn't take into consideration the growth of population in different provinces. And so Gauteng was left to 73 members, yet the maximum is 80, and Gauteng is population is higher than any other province in the country. And KZN was fortunate at the time, so they had the full capacity of 80 members. So it means also, in terms of the allocation, Gauteng is then shortchanged. I just need your views on that. Chair, I'll come back on the second round. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maseko. Honourable Momete.
Chairperson.
Yes, ma'am.
Not just on a point of order. I didn't want to interrupt the member, but she must not misquote me and say wrong things. I never said that political parties that are registered, IEC must look at giving them any funding. My level of thinking are not that low, so I never said that. So I just wanted to correct that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me remind everybody again. Later this afternoon and tomorrow, we'll have a chance to fight with each other. Really, now it's about getting empowerment from everybody. If I can ask all of us just to at least grant us that right to do it, we'll fight politically afterwards. But your point is well taken, that if... That's why I was saying to members, please don't talk to each other. All of you, talk to me, to whatever. No, hold on. All of you guys.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you very much to the IEC for assisting us, the country, to promote the voice of the poor. The voice of the poor, so that it should not be marginalized by the funds of the rich. The funds of the rich that are often used to drown the voice of the poor, the voice of the political parties that represent the poor. And the suggestion that people should know who funds whom, so that if people do not behave according to the mandate of the voices of the people, people will know why, and then in future will not vote those parties that do not represent the poor, but are influenced, and unduly so, by funds of the rich. We see that as a transparency we say that they should be transparent, but in easy language, we say we want to know. We want them to be regulated because funds can be used to influence parties, as it has been done in other countries, and as it can be done in South Africa as well. We also know that the rich countries sometimes donate funds to parties in poorer countries so as to influence their position in order to drown the voice of the poor or the voice that wants their country to be governed in a just way. And we also support the position of the IEC in saying that we've got to look at administration. Should it be administration as it stands, or should it be separate so that as to give credibility to the IEC, firstly, secondly, capacity to the IEC, and the resources to the IEC. I think as the ANC, we are debating the issue around those aspects, protecting the voice of the poor, knowing who pays whom, for what, and making sure that the rich do not have an advantage of those who represent the voices of the poor. And then the ANC looks at the possibility of increasing funds to parties so as to reduce the influence of the rich in drowning the voice of the poor. And the position that has been given by the IEC is going to receive our full consideration, and after discussions, we shall then respond. Thank you.
Honorable Nubendaba.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Deputy Chairperson of the IEC. Chair, my first question is regarding parties. You know, these mushrooming parties, you know, that they tend to register when it's elections. And they are given money by the IEC to go and campaign. But at the end of the day, they don't get anything. Why are we not at least introducing or amending the act that those parties, they should pay back the money? Because every time, you know, there are parties since from 1994, every time when there are elections, they'll come and register. And they'll be given money. I don't want to name them. You know them, some of them. And they'll go, and they won't get even a single seat. Whether it's local government elections or it's national elections, they don't get seats. Why don't you make them to account for the money that they've been given? So that I'm sure that can assist us.
But Chair, I have a point of order, because the honourable member is raising an issue that is not true, and I'm not sure where she's...
I don't need to be corrected by you.
Honourable Matthijs.
It's not true.
Honourable Matthijs.
IEC does not give anybody
honourable
Matthijs to that, so we're going to hear her do an input.
Honourable Matthijs.
It doesn't make any sense, Chair. Does it make sense for us to hear something that is not true for a whole hour?
I'm going to take that decision.
Yeah, but I'm raising it as a point of order,
and I'm dismissing
that
point of order.
Be subjected to hearing about
it. No, I'm dismissing it, Honourable Chair.
So you must admit that we must just listen to something
yes.
that is not
yes.
even presented, it's not
yes.
an act. This is the quality
yes.
that we have from the ANC. No wonder
yes.
we are saying.
Yeah, I'm still on the platform. I am not representing any party. I'm representing the ANC here. Yeah, and so, Chair. I think, Chairperson, can I be protected because I can act more than her? She must never start.
You know, honorable members, we're supposed to be here, all of us, doing something that's going to affect the country for a long time. Can I just ask all of us to have a little bit of patience? All of us. We can disagree with what each other is saying, but we don't have to disrupt the proceedings. I'm appealing to everybody, because we can't continue to have it this way, and it's only two or three of us that are interrupting everybody else. We're not going to allow this to happen. Everybody and anybody. This is your last warning. No. Bongo, I am saying, as the chair, please allow me to chair this meeting, and all of us, can we behave as that? All of us. No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. So I was saying, Deputy Chair, maybe it's high time that those parties, they must pay back the money. My second one is that, do you have any idea that there are foreign governments that are using foundations and NGOs to fund other political parties in our country, especially for elections? And maybe there is a need to regulate in terms of that. But also, the other one is regarding the anonymous donors, Deputy Chair. I understand that maybe people do get monies, and they are allowed not to disclose who are the people who are giving them monies, donations. But I think one way or the other, that can also promote another form of corruption. And if we are saying there's a need for transparency, I think we need to guard against that. And I'm sure there can be other ways of declaring, whether they declare to IEC or whether they declare somewhere in another form. But we must not allow a situation whereby anonymous donors can be allowed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was the last speaker. Honorable Issa, I know you spoke, and the practice was we allow and we have a second round. But if it's really going to be just 1 second, I just don't want to disrupt what you're doing. I'm not going to allow you to, through the back door, come in.
As you know, I stick to the point. It relates to my earlier question about funding, and so just to add on to that, in terms of the funding received from legislatures, is the IEC aware of the funding that's already paid out by certain metros as political party allowances, and also the funding that certain legislatures pay out to political parties in a way that's very different from Parliament? In Parliament, if I have to travel home, book a flight through the parliamentary office and so on. Some legislatures just give a sum of money to political parties to spend on travel, whether it's to go home or to go to the beach on holiday or whatever. Are they aware of that?
I thank you very much. I'm going to give you until 25 past at the absolute latest, sir, to respond to the questions, and then check if there's a need for follow-up questions. If not, then we'll close. 25 past will be your absolute latest. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We're going to try to deal with the questions this way. We have got here with me the manager of the fund, and therefore she will deal with that formula that is being utilized and how it operates and all the questions related to the formula. I will deal with all other questions
And my colleagues here will add if they feel that I've not actually dealt with issues appropriately. But for now, Esther, you can deal with that aspect.
Good afternoon. The question of whether 9010 comes from, it is in the regulations attached to the RPPF Act. And if you look specifically at Regulation 2, 2.1, start dealing with the allocation. And if I can read from the Act, the allocation from the Act be made and paid to each political party concerned are calculated by A, allocating 90% of the total amount of funding determined in terms of sub-regulation 1, proportionately in accordance with regulation 3, and then regulation 3 talks about the proportional allocation, and it says the proportional allocation is determined by dividing the amount contemplated in regulation 2.2a proportionately amongst participating parties in any legislative body referred to in section 93a of the Act in accordance with the number of seats awarded to each participating party in the National Assembly and the provincial legislators jointly. And there was this question on, is it possible then for a party to have only national two national representatives to have more funding than, or receive more funding, less funding than a party who's got only one person on provincial level? And it is possible because the regulation says you count the seat in both ways. So it is possible. Then if you look at the 10%, which is equitable, and the explanation in the regulation 4 says the equitable allocation is determined in the following manner. The amount contemplated in sub-regulation 2.2b must be allocated to representative provinces in proportion to the number of members of the respective provincial legislatures, as contemplated by section 105.2 of the Constitution, and b, the allocation to a particular province in terms of paragraph a must be divided equally amongst the participating parties in the legislature of that province. I hope I've dealt with it. 19 issues.
Thank you very much for that. Let me deal firstly with the issue of the capacity of the Electoral Commission to manage the fund. One of the ideas that we have raised as a commission is that the management of the fund together with the registration of political parties and deregistration of political parties should actually fall under one umbrella and then be managed as a separate entity and be separated from the Electoral Commission. And then we are basing this largely on the experiences of many other countries. I indicated earlier on that once there is a process of regulating private funding, it basically requires a particular regime. There are lots of regulations and laws that we're going to be putting in place in order to make sure that there is compliance. And I've indicated the countries that already have this as a separate entity, particularly I've mentioned the U.S., the Federal Electoral Commission of the U.S. still deals solely with the management of this. If I could just give an indication to the members of what this may entail. It is the administration of campaign financing laws, enforcing limitations and prohibitions on contributions and expenditure, investigations of complaints, referral for prosecution for violations, facilitating auditing of funds allocated, reporting on how much each campaign has raised and spent, and then basically auditing the whole process. Now, when we are running the elections and the logistics of the elections, and at the same time you are trying to look at the political parties to see whether they are complying, it might detract and detract the commission from doing its primary responsibility, which is that of having to organize, manage, and deliver the elections. And it will begin to introduce certain inefficiencies within the organization. And then we are saying at this stage that in order to avoid a situation where the commission is burdened with this responsibility of having to deal with this, let us try to find a different entity that can then manage this complex area that requires really the attention and then the resources. I mean, even if the resources were put into the organization, it would mean that we're going to be creating another big capacity within the organization. And then it begins to raise a question to say, if we are going to be getting the same amount of infrastructure into the organization, why can't you create it as a separate entity in order to be able to deal with this kind of issues? So we are saying it is not impossible for the Electoral Commission to manage this, but we're saying it is not preferable. There is an issue that was raised in relation to election deposit. It's a very difficult issue because, and we've debated this issue for a long time, and I'm sure honorable members, particularly from the EFF, because they raised this issue, and then this matter was also ventilated in court ahead of your registration. Remember that we dealt with this issue. And then the manner that we've been dealing with this issue is two things. You are trying to ensure that you have serious parties that want to contest the elections participating. And at the same time, incorporating the provisions of the Constitution of ensuring that everyone should actually be able to participate. So it's a balancing act. How do you begin to get you know, people who are serious to participate? You may be aware that in the US, for instance, when the elections, there is a party that will participate that is called Mickey Mouse. And it will participate in the elections. Now, if you look at the DRC, for instance, and the ballot paper of the DRC, it's like a massive, it's actually a newspaper. So it is difficult, firstly, to manage it and the logistics thereof, but also in terms of also ordinary people being able to find their own party. If you've got 6 pages of a ballot paper and then your party is number 355, because you have not imposed any limitations, it becomes extremely difficult to manage an arrangement like it. So when we introduce the regulation to deal with party deposit, it is largely to make sure that those parties that are serious about contesting the elections do contest the elections, and as you know, they do get their deposit back once they get a seat in Parliament. So that is the only thing that we are trying to do through the introduction of the deposit, and to do the balancing. There was a question about the funding of political parties at the local level. Where do we find the resources? Are we going to be reallocating what we currently have to cover that aspect, or are we requesting or recommending that you have more funds allocated to the fund in order to be able to cover the areas that are currently not covered. We have not explored that area in detail. I'm sure it is an aspect that must be dealt with in conjunction with National Treasury. They are the ones who will be able to indicate as to whether the fiscus can actually be able to afford a particular amount being allocated to political parties that are contesting the elections on. From our side as the Electoral Commission, we have not done a study to be able to see how that particular element is going to be dealt with, except that we are leaving it as open as that to yourselves as honourable members to say this is another way of looking at the issue and it can be explored further to see how it is actually going to be dealt with. But remember that the reason why the RPPF at the moment is being managed with proportionality, it is because the constitution says that the electoral system in South Africa is largely proportional. So the element of proportionality must always be a dominant element within whatever arrangement and formula that we're going to be introducing. There was also a question raised about the candidate fundraising to say how does this impact on the overall element that we're trying to deal with. I indicated earlier on that if this element is not accommodated, it basically means that it is quite feasible and possible that a political party, instead of actually complying because it is required to comply, it would use candidates who are contesting the elections as proxy for fundraising. In other words, they fundraise, but they know that they're fundraising for Party A. And therefore, if you leave the candidates completely out and there is no regime that regulates that, it essentially means that you would have left a very important element out of the scope. And there is a potential of the system being abused. And therefore, we are trying to say, in order to make sure that we cover every element, we've got to make sure that every public representative is regulated by whatever regime that would be in existence. There was also a question about public funding by provinces as to whether this is consistent or inconsistent with the constitution and the provisions. We, as the Electoral Commission, are managing the RPPF. So what the provinces have done is that they introduced their own legislation, separate from the legislation that we are currently running. And it is that legislation that empowers them to distribute their money the way they're distributing it. We don't know, we have not looked at all of them to check as to whether the provisions within this legislative arrangements are consistent or inconsistent with the Constitution. I would assume that by the time they put in place those legislative arrangements, they would have investigated to check as to whether what they are doing is consistent or inconsistent with the Constitution. But from our side as the Electoral Commission, we have not assessed all the piece of legislation to check as to whether they are consistent or inconsistent with the Constitution. There is an issue about whether the regulation of private funding does deter corruption and the linkage thereof, and I think it was raised by largely by the Honourable Self. I remember from the beginning what I indicated, and I think you wanted also empirical evidence in relation to this particular aspect. We are using data largely from international idea, and they indicate the countries that are vulnerable to corruption, that in a case where there is no regulation, there is an element of vulnerability of those countries to corruption. And I remember from the beginning, I indicated that we are doing this thing because largely we try to strengthen the electoral democracy in the country, and secondly, that we are trying to minimize elements of corruption. And I'm sure everybody would agree, even without me presenting any empirical evidence on this aspect, that transparency in any system does deter capacity for people to be corrupt. So in a situation where everything is in the open, possibilities of people being corrupted would be minimized by that. And then, again, we can give you references in relation to the studies that we've done. And then all these elements are being raised, particularly in the study by the International IDEA, to say, regulate the party funding in order to be able to deal with possibilities of corruption. You might not be able to completely eliminate corruption, but transparency does play an important role in terms of minimizing elements of corruption. And then there was also a follow-up question about foreign funding. Say, what do we mean by foreign funding? And then you mentioned people in diaspora and saying, if those people are wherever and then they're making contribution, is that foreign funding? It is not foreign funding. Foreign funding in the literature refers largely to governments funding political parties in particular countries. So, because we are basing our submission on studies that have been done in the electoral field, this is how this element is understood in the literature dealing with this in the elections. It does not refer to the categories that you are referring to of a South African who's in diaspora playing a role and contributing towards a particular political party. Now, there was also an element around the new entrants and fly-by-nights and whether there is a survey that is, why don't we do a survey in order to be able to avoid a fly-by-nights? Or the political parties themselves. The political parties can do that on their own. But remember that the responsibility that we have as the Electoral Commission is to manage the electoral processes, and therefore we've got to look at the issues that I have raised earlier on. How do you begin to prevent people who are not really serious about participating in the elections, and how to separate them from those people who are serious about participating in the elections? You remember in 1994, quite a number of political parties received the resources. And then there were lots and lots of them. And then immediately after they received the resources, they just disappeared. Some of them could not even account for the money that they were actually given. So how do we begin to deal with that particular aspect? It's a difficult one. But the mechanism that we currently have at least does assist in terms of dealing with that particular aspect. There is an element about the use of the code of conduct and matters that are being referred to the electoral court, and that the IEC has not been responding positively to some of the issues. We try by all means to listen to the political parties when they raise issues of violation. Sometimes what takes time, such as what happened in the last elections, when a party submits an objection to say there is a violation in a particular area, we've got to investigate. And then once we say, give us more information about it, political parties expect us to be the ones now that are going to be going all over to find information about an incident that they have raised. And then there are some political parties that raised issues or violations, and then when they were supposed to provide us with more information, they were no longer willing to proceed with that particular aspect. And then you may be aware that, in fact, following just ahead of the 2016 local government election, we established a directorate just to deal with the violations of the Code of Conduct. And there have been cases that we referred to the Electoral Court for prosecution. So, yes, it is possible that in the past we may not have had the capacity to deal with this particular aspect to the satisfaction of the political parties, but ahead of the 2016 local government elections, we established capacity within the organization, and then we dealt with all those issues that were being raised by the political parties. And we'll continue to do that, so that directorate remains in the organization to deal with the violations of the Code of Conduct. There was a question about the issue of registration fees and saying, the query was, why should a party with 1 million members pay the same amount as a party with 10 members? Remember that we draw our mandate from the Constitution, and the Constitution emphasizes the element of inclusivity. So, again, the reason why we are making sure that all the political parties are equal, it is because we are informed by the provisions of the Constitution in arriving at that kind of a determination. There was an aspect about capping of funds. We, as the Commission, have not applied our minds to that element, and therefore we're leaving it at the level of a principle because we believe that it's a useful principle that can actually help to level the playing field. So how much should a party be allowed to fundraise, and how much should be the cap? The Commission does not have a position in relation to that aspect, and then we are leaving it at a level of a principle to the political parties to say that it's a matter that you can explore further and see how it can be dealt with. There was an issue in relation to compliance with the tax laws. The Commission operates on the basis of the powers it has. And then this power that the Commission has are determined by yourselves as honorable members. And therefore, if an element it is not in the legislation, and the Commission is not empowered to deal with that particular aspect, we don't deal with it. We assume that the other institutions in the society that are empowered in legislation to deal with that particular aspect. So, honourable member, we don't deal with that aspect as such, because the legislation, and we try to stick strictly to what we are empowered to do. And we only deal specifically with the provisions within the give. Honourable members want to give us more powers. It is within your capacity to do so, so that we can be able to deal with some of the issues that you are raising. The issue of voter education, I think it's an important aspect. We come to Parliament from time to time, to the portfolio committee, and then we indicate how much we want, and then we also go to National Treasury and indicate how much we want. But voter education, in most instances, when it comes to allocation of funds, it is regarded as a soft area. And therefore, it is always very difficult to get the kind of money that we require for voter education, and therefore, some of our campaigns in the voter education, therefore, get compromised as a result of it. So we rather than take the resources that are there allocated to us and then focus them more on the logistics of running the elections. If we have more, if our budget is increased, of course we can have more resources then to deal with the issue of voter education. You may be aware that just dealing with the implementation of the judgment of the Constitutional Court in relation to the addresses, we've been indicating to the National Treasury how much more resources we require just to be able to deal with the implementation of that particular aspect. But if we had more resources, of course, we would actually be able to deal with that aspect. There was an issue about the seat allocation and the fact that the population of Gauteng has increased tremendously since the formula was developed and that we have not been acting in line with it. The formula is determined in terms of the formula prescribed by the national legislation. We indicated this, I think the members, particularly from Gauteng, have been raising it, raising this issue for almost 10 years now. And then our approach has always been, the formula that is used to determine the seats is not in our capacity as the Electoral Commission. It is Parliament that has determined the formula, and it is within the capacity of Parliament to look into that and see how it can deal with that particular aspect. We've been referring it to Parliament, and once again, I'm referring it to yourselves as honourable members to look at it and see what you can do in relation to that. Issues of foreign governments using foundation to fund certain parties, we have not looked into that as the Commission. There is no such study that we have done, and therefore we are unable to express an opinion on something that we have not studied. The issue of anonymous donors, indeed, we indicated from the beginning of the presentation that we're trying to say to you, honourable members, that we've got to have a transparent system, and it is only a transparent system that will be able to assist. It will go a long way in terms of keeping elements of corruption within the electoral process. We are not aware of any metro or municipality that is allocating money to the political parties. And also, other than the legislation that we have quoted in relation to the provinces, we are not aware of any other mechanism or arrangement that is being used for the purpose of legislatures funding any political party. Chairperson, I would like to believe that I tried to deal with all the questions.
I think you have, as is normal practice, or
one question if there is a member, if you so wish. Honorable Singh, Honorable Mona.
Chairperson, thank you.
Hold on, let me finish.
Oh, sorry.
Honorable Singh, Honorable Mulder, Kubisa, Honorable Matthijs, Comrade Gordy, Honorable Dlamini, and Honorable Pongo, and Honorable Lees. One question per member, Honorable Singh.
Chairperson, thank you, and thank you for the responses. Mine is not really a question, but a request, because the regulations were referred to in response to the interpretation and application of equitable and proportional. And if we can get a copy of those regulations through Cindy.
In your file, and you've received a copy of
I got the acts, but not the regulations.
The regulations.
Are they
yeah.
here?
Yeah.
Or I need to file. And then an updated provincial allocation list of public funding.
And where do we get that from?
Well, she must contact the provinces. Because the IEC gave us a 2012-13.
Okay.
It'll help us in our deliberations.
All right. Fine. Honorable Mulder? Is that all? Honorable Mulder?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. When you talk about public funding, we are talking about different things. We are talking about the political fund. We're talking about Parliament's funding of political parties, we're talking about the legislatures. Am I correct in saying that the only involvement of the IEC is with regard to the public fund in terms of 236? In other words, that the IEC is not involved with regard to the provincial funding or whatever is happening except for that fund. That's the first one. The second one is, currently the IEC is managing and administering the public fund, the fund as well. And that fund is regulated to a very large extent in terms of what's expected of parties, etc. So, except for the things that you indicated with regard to the expenses, that doesn't come, that you don't get any extra money for the expenses with regard to the fund and the auditing of the fund. Is there any reason why the IEC could not continue with that part of political funding? In other words, dealing only with public funds and let a separate entity deal completely with private funding and regulation of that.
Prof. Kubisa?
Thank you, Chairperson. Vice Chairperson, I just need a bit of a clarity on this specific election campaign funding. You didn't touch on that one. And then, secondly, you didn't touch on the issue of the regulated donor funding as well. How should it be regulated? Just briefly, what's your opinion on that?
The Honourable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. There seems to be a bit of a disarray in terms of who's actually responsible for public funding, just generally, because there are provinces, and I'm not aware of any legislative or provincial legislative acts that have been enacted in the provinces. I know they have policies, but I don't know of any acts, and I'd also like to follow up on Honorable Singh's request that we try and get copies of those if any are available, so it will help us in our deliberations as well. And the question on determining how serious political parties are and those fly-by-night ones, etc., why does it have to come down to the money? There are other ways to determine how serious a political party is. For example, when you register, we have to submit a certain number of names of voters who say that they support the registration of this political party. So we could go along the same line. I mean, it's not that easy to go and do door-to-door and submit 10,000 names or 20,000 names of registered voters who are saying, okay, I support that this political party should be able to contest elections. I don't think it must always be something that must come down to financial implications, so we should look at options on that. So if you could speak to that, please. And then the constitutional
Oh, yes, I know we're limited to one. You're speaking to... there was a contradiction there, right? You say one minute, you say that the Constitution is speaking to proportionality, and then it's also speaking to multi-party democracy and the strengthening of a multi-party democracy. We have to be able to find a balance. And the IEC must come and tell us what is proper, like 90, 10%. I don't know how that seems to be bridging the gap between the two, because it supports both, and we must be able to find something that the Constitution supports both. So you must tell us in your experience and on your research that's based on that. And it's very unfortunate that the IEC came here unprepared to talk to us about foreign funding and what's the best way to regulate that. Very unfortunate. So I hope in the second batch that you'll be able to come and give us some advice on how we should move on that.
And Comrade Gordy.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Honorable Sir is correct. I struggled to be anything other than comrade for the past while that I've been here. Deputy Chair of the IEC, I think there was one part of my question that was not spoken to. Yes, the regulations were read, and that's what you have, that's what you use. But I'm saying when you go to, when you look at section 236, it talks about national legislation to provide for the funding of political parties, participating in national and provincial legislation, right, on an equitable and proportional basis to enhance multi-party democracy. And I'm saying, well, if it's outside your scope, it's fine, but I'm just flagging it. How did we come to, say, equitable? Means provincial legislature only, and yet proportional. We use it for both national assembly as well as provinces. Because the word in the Constitution says equitable, so you either interpret it as, you know, I was an English teacher, I interpret it as such, or a lawyer will interpret it from a legal point of view, but how then did it degenerate to mean province? I think, and then I was therefore linking it to your presentation about the need to change the formula in such a way that it tries to, you know, reach out to everybody. And I'm saying, if the regulations stand as they are, then whether it is 80-20 or 40-60, for me, for the APC now, it might not mean anything at best, but at worst, it could actually adversely affect our proportional, allocation. I think that's the point that I think does need to be spoken to. Thank you.
Honorable Zamin.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm glad the Honorable Court is here, because it looks like SCOPA has got work to do. Because I don't agree with the response that says the IEC, they don't have powers to check that the institutions that deal with, or the companies or NGOs, anything that deals with them, is tax compliant. It's a law. Municipalities, they don't have to have powers, but their responsibility to check that every institution, individual, or anything that deals with the state, it's a law. Because we have the same issues, because if that is the thinking, then you are saying, as the IEC, that even someone is not complying with the law, you just ignore, and then you just focus on doing your own things. Let me remind you that we had the same situation where a high-ranking official of the IEC was involved in some dodgy property dealings. That means, because if you want to put it like that, is that you are aware, but you said, no, this one is not within our powers that were given by Parliament, and that can never be correct. You are a government institution. Anyone who wants to make dealings with you, either political parties, private companies, anything, because you've got private companies that provide services to the IEC. So are you telling us that you don't check if those companies are tax compliant because you are not empowered to do that? That cannot be correct. All I'm asking and chairperson through you is that the IEC has got an obligation to make sure that everyone that they do business or any activity with them, they have to make sure that those people are complying with the law. And the issues of tax, it's a law. So they have to make sure that those things, they happen. So I'm going to request through you, chairperson, that maybe it's one of the requests that we want to put out to the IEC, that can you give us, it's only how many, 48 political parties, can we check that all these political parties are tax compliant on the basis of the law? Because political parties, they are doing business. They are private. There's business. Once you start exchanging money and agreements, that means there's transactions that take place, and they have to comply with the law. So you can't say no. We don't. That is not within our mandate. That was given by Parliament. That means you are doing transactions with wrong people and dodgy issues that are happening there. So let's avoid to do that. That's why I'm saying maybe it's an issue that will end up there in scope to check if we are doing proper things. Thanks, Chairperson.
No, I think you have to answer the second part of it. That matter is not within our mandate at all for this committee. But you are absolutely correct that indeed if it must go to another portfolio committee or another agency, it should go there. So I just thought that us, otherwise she'll be writing letters to you to give that to us, clean up ahead as this committee, but it's certainly a matter for Parliament. So thank you very much, Honourable Tami. Bongo, and then this will be the last one, Honourable Bongo.
Thanks, President. I think I was generally covered by Honourable Mulder with his question, Chair, but there has been concerns from other presentations that we got from yesterday around the fund and the capacity of the IEC to manage the fund. So I want you to share light in terms of the capacity and the management itself. But Chairperson, over and above that, I think this presentation gives us an opportunity also to IEC to just do some dashboard of issues that Parliament need to attend to, separate those issues, forward them to Parliament so that we're able to tighten certain legislation around the work that you do without taking issues to scope and so on and so forth. But we need to progressively assist in terms of tightening legislation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure. Honourable Singh brought up the question about these funds, and I'm not sure whether IEC is the right body to ask to do this, or whether we should be doing it. But I mean, we need to now really get to grips with all these funds that are paid to political parties, at municipalities, at legislatures, in Parliament, the IEC, to be able to make some decisions. So I think the IEC, if I may, are saying no, that's not going to, we can't do that, or can they do it? If they can't, then I'm going to ask Mr. Chairman that we find a way of doing it ourselves.
All right, we'll have those discussions. I don't want to engage with him now. We'll have those discussions tomorrow, whether we want to get involved in rents and sense of the principle and that type of thing, but that discussion we'll have. I don't know if they said no. I'm saying if they say no and they can't, it's something that we must look at. You've got 10 minutes, sir. 10 minutes.
Thank you very much. Perhaps let's start with the last question. And then Esther will answer it. And I would like also to answer Honourable Goody's question as well.
Yes, we don't have capacity to do that type of research. And I know there was a lot of attempts in the past to try and determine exactly who was paid what. But I know that National Treasury, have they presented already? they phoned us and they were preparing some information and collecting some information. So hopefully they will tomorrow. I think they tomorrow, or they not. Okay. But I know that they were trying to also get their finger on the pulse, and they asked us whether we have any indication on what is allocated, and I think it's a very dark hole currently. Somebody will have to try and dig in and get it collectively from everybody else. If I can just Honourable Dlamini to make him more at peace with the tax laws, if I can touch on that one. As the fact the Act currently stands, the books of political parties are audited by their own internal audit or with the internal audit company that is registered. The onus is on that auditor to declare if a party's tax affairs are not in order, and they do, and the Auditor General also, when they audit the books of the fund, send a questionnaire to those auditors, and one of the questions that they do ask is compliance with certain laws and regulations. And I can say, not the past financial year, but the previous financial year, the auditors of a party did declare that the tax affairs of that party was not in order, and we asked them to quantify what the amount was that because they didn't pay over UIF that was due to SASH, and we deducted it from that specific political party, the liability that they had. We did deduct it. So we do apply certain rules and regulations and make sure that it's compliant. Okay.
Thank you very much, Esther, for dealing with those questions. Earlier on, I indicated in terms of the capacity of the IEC. When Honourable Member, this question was raised, I indicated the kind of activities that are supposed to be taking place under this fund. And I indicated that largely because of the case of the U.S., where a fund like this is managed by the Electoral Commission, and the Electoral Commission in the U.S. does not run the elections. It only focuses on the fund itself. It is the management of the funds, the campaigning, the allocations, all the elements that I have raised. And I said, our preference as the Commission is that it should actually be dealt with by a separate entity. And I indicated also that we are not saying it is impossible for this to be under the current organization. But I indicated the kind of the challenges and difficulties that it will bring, particularly in relation to introducing some inefficiencies that we are trying to avoid. We would like to focus more on the current responsibilities, and therefore that's why we prefer a separate entity dealing with this, and I suggested that that entity could also begin to take certain responsibilities that are currently under the Electoral Commission, which are the registration of political parties as well as the deregistration thereof. So the fund, it's managed concurrently with the registration and the deregistration of political parties. Election campaign fund, my understanding is that what we are raising as part of what could actually emerge within that, because we are raising this issue in our presentation, it is something that could be accommodated largely under the umbrella of whatever entity that is going to be established to deal with it. We have indicated that we think it is preferable that the resources that are allocated to the political parties are not only dealing with administrative issues, but that that begin to address the issues of campaign financing for political parties. I'm not too sure as to whether I'm answering the question that you asked properly. Okay. So that's how we suggested that it should actually be dealt with, so that there is specifically a certain amount that is allocated to deal with assisting the political parties during the campaign. The provincial statute, honorable member, I know that Gauteng has got a statute that governs their fund. But what we could also try to do, even though this information could be easily available, we could coordinate such that we send it to the secretariat as soon as we leave here, so that we check all the provinces that have got the fund, check the regulatory mechanisms that have got in place, and then submit it to the committee through the secretariat. And I think it goes also in line with the request that was made that we should actually supply the updated provincial allocation as soon as we can. I think it's a matter that we will attend to immediately when we get. It should be possible to get this information by tomorrow. And there is a recommendation that was made, honorable member, in terms of money for registration of political parties, particularly for participation in the elections. And the recommendation that has been made by the honorable member is that we should look at that particular aspect and see as to whether there are no other mechanisms that we could put in place that will eliminate people who are not really seriously contesting the elections. And then I think it's a recommendation that we'll take forward and see what mechanism we can put in place. I'm not too sure if I've covered every aspect that was raised, but I would like to believe so.
Chair. Honourable Mona, then Honourable Gordon.
Yes, Chairperson, I just need clarity. The Chairperson, the Vice Chairperson talks about the fund, but I think we're talking about different things. We're talking about the current fund that deals with public monies. But there's a provision or there's a suggestion now that there may be created a new body which is called the Democracy of Funds, something that will deal with private donations. In my mind, I see two different entities. So what I'm trying to ascertain, and that's what I've asked basically, if the ISC continues to handle only the public fund, given the things that you've indicated that there are problems, will that be possible in terms of the capacity of the ISC to continue with that? I'm not talking about a possible new private democracy fund.
Yeah, definitely we will continue operating, and we don't think that there are any insurmountable factors that would make it difficult for us to continue with the program.
And you have the requisite capacity to continue that?
We do indeed have the capacity.
Honorable Gordon?
Yeah, Chair, if I've missed something, I would like to hear from you what answer you had in relation to my question, in case, because I suspect I was listening, as I indicated, in the Constitution, proportional is used by the IEC the way we understand it in everyday English and applies to both national and provincial, but the other aspect of equitable, which means treat everyone fair, impartial, same way, just, is only used for provinces. And I said, why is the National Assembly excluded from the equitable? What was the rationale? That's what I'm trying to understand. How did we come to interpret equitable in the Constitution mean provincial legislation. And I said, if they are not able to, it's not in their province, or it is not, they must say so. But we can't just, and I'm not intending to take anyone to court to recover lost money for all these years. I'm just saying, let's just get clarity. So that as we discuss and want to amend and do new things, we take all these elements into account.
Let me attempt and you can respond to it. I thought what they were saying to us is that there is current legislation and they followed it to the book. So the problem really isn't theirs. The problem is ours in terms of how we craft that legislation. But be it as it may, whether it's ours or theirs, this affords us an opportunity to close the gap. Because once we've closed the gap, they are duty-bound to live by what we're giving them. So it might be, have punished you till today, but it emphasizes the urgency for us to do something, to fix up some of these gaps. So I'm hoping I'm covering you because but it's certainly something that we should look at, debate, and introduce it. Or if it is there, strengthen it from our side so that there is no grey area from their side. Honourable Mulder, I'm looking at you. Is that?
Yes, absolutely. The committee will set us free.
The committee will set us free. Thank you so much, Mr. Tselane and your team. Thank you very much. Honourable members, remember we said we will meet tomorrow, 9:30, and hopefully we'll be done in an hour, 2 hours. But the point that I wanted to make, Honourable Members, so that we don't move from here thinking that, and I think this is what Honourable Mulder raised in the beginning, this is going to be a product of political parties. Regardless of what has come through from all the stakeholders, ultimately it's the political parties that will take a decision and have to defend the decision. So I'm saying that because I sometimes got the sense we were sometimes saying, you must go and fix it up. You must go and fix it up. Treasury must go and fix it up. SARS must go and fix it up. We're going to fix it up. Members must just understand that it's an opportunity for us to fix it up and for them to implement it at the end of the day. So tomorrow we will, honorable members, we ask the entire team of researchers to pick up what is the key areas. We know, for instance, there's the issues around the 90-10. We know there's the issues around disclosure and so on. So that they just put it there for us. These are the key issues. So that will inform our discussion in terms of politically what is it that we want to achieve. Having had that discussion, we will then go and ask them to do this thing that I call the paper, Honorable Amalda. So that paper informs our deliberations on Tuesday, so that we don't deliberate just from the air. So they will, Golida and your team, you'll have 15 minutes at maximum. It's got no status, it's just to highlight what you think the areas that came out of all the submissions. Who is it? Is it the IEC? Is it a different body? The enforcement and so on. We will then have a discussion as political parties, give them a mandate or an instruction to go and present or to prepare the paper. On Tuesday we will sit with that paper, start arguing amongst ourselves which areas there's agreement, which areas there's no agreement, trying to meet each other so that we get to a point of draft bill number one. That's the process we're going to follow. And we'll be able to get your highlights by the end of the afternoon today. Thank you. It'll go to Cindy, it'll go to members. It's got no status, it'll just be the highlights that you'll talk to in the morning, and we will use that in preparing our own discussions of what do we want as a political institution and go and work on it. Then every political party will argue his position. 90-10, 50-50, disclose, don't disclose. At the end of the day, we will come up with something that hopefully there will be consensus on. So, can we meet again? Yeah. So, in terms of what is going to happen tomorrow, honourable members, 9:30 we'll meet here. Hopefully by 11:30 or so we should be out, because it's really just about framing what it is that we want. then the real work starts on Tuesday, which means that by close of business on Monday, hopefully we'll get the paper that we're going to work so that members can go and look at it, so that on Tuesday we see how far apart we are and how soon we can get together or closer. And we provisionally scheduled 2 days for that discussion. So members must understand, whatever the paper is, whether it's 20 pages or 10 pages, we've scheduled 2 days. And hopefully after those 2 days, we'll be able to have something to give to the legal team to start going and doing what is necessary. Is that in order, Honourable Members, in terms of program? Honourable Singh.
Yeah, Chair, when you say 2 days, you mean 2 mornings, because we've got plenaries next week. Thank you.
Yeah, so we're talking about, if we take it 9:30 to 1, that's 3 hours, we're talking about 6 hours or something like that. And if we need more time, we'll find more time, because there's nothing that stops us from coming back from plenary and sitting from 7 o'clock until 11 o'clock if we need to. So provisionally we will set 9 to 1 on Tuesday and Wednesday, I think. And after Wednesday, if we need some time, we'll ask for permission to sit after the sittings. But remember, there's a time frame that we're working to. So the 2 days we're talking about is from 9:30 to 1 on Tuesday and 9:30 to 1 on Wednesday. But you will get notices of where we're meeting and so on. We're meeting here. It looks like we've booked this place out. So, Honourable Members, 9:30 tomorrow morning. Once again, to our friends from the media, thank you very much. Stakeholders, thank you very much. And as we say to everybody else, Mr. Tselane, besides the 2 things that you're going to give us, if there's anything else that you think would be important to assist us, you are more than free to unsolicitedly give it to Cindy. We'll consider it. If there's something that we think as you're walking out, we will come back to you and say, over and above those 2, please submit that for us. Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. We meet tomorrow at 9:30 in the Old Assembly. Honourable Members, there's that normal mass building arrangement for those that wish. No, how can you say check out after the announcement?
Because they had lunch first.
You think we have 10 people finding their food?
The must be secret funding.
We have 10 people a month on this meal, so we know.
Okay.